Kauai Soapbox Live.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
This is Felicia, and I got a couple of friends in here. I got Nomi and Christy, and we might have more people coming up and joining us, maybe Clayton and Wendell, who were on last week. Girls, can you say hi so I can tell if you're there?
Aloha.
Aloha.
All right, you're there. And we're going to be talking about a whole world of things today. Both of these women have been quite active in the Bill 2491 and beyond topic, and that, of course, continues to be a little bit of a topic, or big topic. I want to give a shout-out to the Waimea folks this weekend. It seemed like that town was alive very peacefully. I think we need a giant makahiki. On one part of town, about two blocks away, the biotech industry had a big party, a Halloween party with rides and everything for the kids. Almost took a picture where it said Syngenta, and right above it, Nightmare in Waimea. I thought the PR person really missed on that one. But seems like they were, you know, providing a lot of fun for the kids. And then I was at the Aloha Aina party where a lot more fun for the kids was happening down there. That was really great. It was down there with plants to give away, a lot of great music. So shout out to Waimea for being a loving community that has got a lot of spirit. And
it was a beautiful event.
It was a beautiful event.
It was beautiful.
So those are some issues, but we are also going to be talking about a handful of other things. And every once in a while I have to zoom the lens back a little bit and look at what's going on in the world. I've been so busy being a local fighter against global Goliath that sometimes we have to look at the monster. And for people who use that word conspiracy, I say you're not paying attention. Although it might be that there's some fear involved there too, and I will say it is like watching a horror movie. My sons won't watch any of these videos because they're too scary, but they will watch all the ones that are too scary for me to see. So I was noticing this economic reform bill that's out there, the financial reform bill written by Chris Dodd. I guess what caught my attention, so I'm just throwing it out there in case some of our Akamai callers are listening and want to call in, is that the Kauai National Guard, I've been hearing from direct sources that they've been overdoing training. They were on Hawaii Island, but with rubber bullets and batons for civil unrest. And then I was speaking with somebody else at the Lihui Business Association meeting in the after elements when they were talking about basically people padding their retirements, and somehow the police issue came up. And so I asked, why are we bringing in all this hardened vehicles and heavy equipment? I have other Akamai listeners who text me pictures of these things. I think they're called MRAPs. I forget what MRAPs stand for. I can pull that up, though, because I have it up. And these really intense vehicles that were designed to protect soldiers from IEPs, individual explosive devices, I think IEDs, in Iraq and Afghanistan. And they have hardened Hummers that they've brought on to the island. And so I asked, well, what on earth do we need those things for here, these things with turrets and stuff? And they said, well, there's a lot of people using ICE. And frankly, I think we all know a lot of people using ICE, and I'm not afraid of them. You know, they're just another person down the street for the most part. I mean, there might be a few scary apples out there, but
I don't think it takes an MRAP or a armored vehicle to
take on somebody with a bad health habit. I have a caller. Aloha, you are on the air. Can you hear me?
Aloha.
Aloha. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Maybe they'll call back. So I don't think it takes, you know, armored vehicles to take that on. Where am I getting a... Who's got a phone?
It's my fault. Sorry.
Okay, turn that off, please.
It's off.
I was seeing that. So when we're getting these MRAPs coming on and hardened vehicles and our National Guard getting training with these bullets, and then I was also seeing something called NICE and a handful of advertisements, and I understand that a lot of the training that's going in our police department is how to follow people's Facebook accounts and how to target people. So far, I haven't felt abused by the police at the public demonstrations that have been happening. Naomi, you've been to a lot around the state. Have you experienced any?
Actually, the police have been amazing to us, and most of them usually get interested in the topic, and we end up having conversations with them. And so, you know, on Oahu, they have the Civil Affairs Division that we call them the Aloha Cops. So they have on Hawaiian shirts and Aloha shirts and the straw hats and the orange badges, and to make them apparently appear less intimidating. It doesn't confuse anyone. We still know they're cops, but they've been nothing but aloha to us so far.
I've actually been, especially in the Poipu March, really, really pleased. They seemed like they were being kind to us, not being containing. It seemed like they were.
I went to the Maui March for Monsanto, and the police were incredibly nice to us through the whole thing, and they protected us. And I had heard rumors that the police on Maui were mean, and when it was all said and done, I looked at everybody and said, "The police on Maui are wonderful."
Yeah, or at least that day, yeah. You know. So, right. I mean, we're having positive anecdotal stories, not negative ones. Okay, right. Do you have a caller? Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha, this is Bill.
Hi, can you turn your radio off, please?
I don't have my radio on.
Okay, all right. So, were you listening to some of what we were saying? Do you have some mana'o to share with us on any of the topics, or what's on your mind?
Oh, I was probably more interested in discussing the bringing of the military hardware and gear onto the island.
Perfect. So tell us what you know.
Well, from what I had heard, that they had brought several MRAPs on board through Nwili Willy, and I was just a little bit interested in why they might bring them over here, because, number one, they're not suited for this type of environment.
Can you elaborate on that, please?
Well, an MRAP is, they use them in Iraq primarily because they were really durable and very resistant to EIDs and EFPs, shaped charges, and they also use them for riot control. They're a huge machine. They said that the turret sits about 16 feet high. They're four-wheel drive. They got a hydraulic gate in the back, and they seat about 8 people. Now, they have bulletproof glass that's 3 inches thick, and they can carry electronic warfare equipment, primarily EWOC and Warlock systems.
You sound like you've had military experience. Is that correct?
I've been around a lot of military gear, yes.
Okay. So tell us what that EWOC is. Is that the sound, the electric sound that, like, breaks people's eardrums kind of thing?
No, actually, it's jamming equipment. So, and it has a range of about 500 yards. So 1,500 feet around one of these units, everything goes black. I'm talking cell phones, everything, radios, you name it. So it has the ability to block low and high frequencies, can block cell phone towers, and it pretty much shuts down all the communication around it.
Wow. Okay. And then why do you think they're here?
Well, there's one of two reasons. I didn't see them. If they were, you know, desert brown, then they're probably just surplus that was left over, and they might be used for the local National Guard training or something. But here's the problem: these units weigh 50 tons, just bare bones. If they have any electronic gear, and if they've been up-armored, reinforced where the they really can withstand a lot of abuse. They weigh close to 80 tons. They have very poor all-terrain capabilities. So that means that they probably couldn't cross most of the bridges here on the island. And they definitely cannot get in the sand and soft soil. They will bury up, and you won't be able to get rid of them. And plus, they have a number of design issues, too, if they're thinking of using them for anything. Now, if they're going to use them for training, that's probably one thing, but they're going to be able to, it's going to be very limited training. Because, like I say, they can only access the hard roads and the very, very high-capacity bridges. The other problem with them is that their battery pack is mounted right next to their fuel cell, and so they've had a lot of problems with them burning down and blowing up.
Wow.
Yeah. If they're trying to use them for riot control, there's other weaknesses. Their radiator is very exposed, and so once the radiator's compromised, their cooling system is gone. Now, you need the tires, they're pretty much sustainable. They're pretty much, you can't deflate them because they have onboard compressors and stuff. But,
well, I wonder.
They have a,
go ahead. I was going to say, like, when I see these pictures of these coming onto Kauai, I've also seen some with the full turrets on the internet is where I've seen it at different universities where they're putting these, it looks to me like they're taking surplus military equipment from these wars and bringing them home, and they don't have any place else to put them, so instead of mothballing them, they're putting them in universities and small town police departments and all over the place. It must cost money to maintain them, but really the cost of these vehicles isn't what concerns me. I think, you know, you give people a toy to play with, and at some point you want to utilize it, you want to train with it. I think that, you know, we are way too overarmed on this island anyway for the level of crime that we have, but I see them doing this across the whole country.
Do we know for a fact that these are with the police department? That
I don't.
Not?
I don't. I just, what I see is people taking pictures of them.
So
coming
they could
off.
Be for the Kauai National Guard. We don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
That would be, if an Akamai caller knew, it would, you know, be good to find out.
Well, one of the things is that not some average person is going to be able to operate this. In other words, the electronic warfare is very complex equipment, and to let just anybody in there would be rather stupid, just to tell you the truth. And these things, like I say, they are beasts, and if you don't know what you're doing, you can get into a lot of trouble with them. And for instance, the electronic warfare antenna that's on the right rear, it looks like a large cylinder to the right, of the turret, and the military mounted into 50 caliber machine guns on top of it. Well, the design is such that if you don't know what you're doing and you try to fire that M2, you can actually shoot the antenna off the MRAP. So it's something that, you know, people go to school for, you know, 5-6 months just to learn the basics on it. And there's a number of disciplines that are used to operate this. So to put this in the hands of the police department is absolutely inane.
Maybe it's the National Guard. I don't know. I just know that they're, you know, I'm seeing pictures and it looks like our not Willy Willy, you know, where they're coming off.
I would like to think it's going to the National Guard, but it's still, you know, unless you've had some experience with these vehicles, particularly on the island that we live on here, you could bury one of those things up, and you know, not just anything around here can pull out a 50 to 80 ton vehicle. So, you know, it's just like kindergartners with power tools, you know.
Yeah.
So, have you followed any of these other issues, like where I'm seeing that? You know, there's all this prepping for, like, a November 1st, both a resiliency test on the electronic grid. I'm seeing that. I was looking around on the internet and seeing where they're expecting some unrest around November 1st because they're cutting back food stamps. There's a lot of issues like that. Do you see a corollary in that? What have you been looking at?
Well, you know, it appears. Now, there's a lot of false flags and a lot of misinformation that goes on, but, you know, they've raised the level of food stamps, and they'll call them entitlements. I'll call them stuff you get from other people for free. You know, when you put a whole bunch of people in that position and you get them used to free corn or free food stamps, whatever you want to call it, and then start pulling back on it, yeah, you're going to have unrest. And that's by design, if you ask me. I mean, why condition all these people to these entitlements and then say we're going to pull them back and then act surprised when there's unrest? I mean, why would the Department of Homeland Security buy 1.7 billion rounds of 40 caliber ammunition and various ammunition calibers? You know, we haven't used that much in Iraq and Afghanistan.
And then those purchases have been within about the last 18 months, right? They've been purchasing for a while, right? It keeps coming, more purchases,
That's correct. That's correct. The manufacturers can't make it fast enough. Like I say, the military, they were geared to take care of the military, and the military uses a lot of ammunition, but not that much. Why does the IRS need that much ammunition?
Social Security Administration, they have ammunition.
Exactly. So what they've got is they've got their own private army, because what they have is they don't have that kind of loyalty in the military, because the military, for the most part, they understand freedoms and liberties. And they understand that the primary duty of a soldier is to protect the liberty of people. And that goes back to George Washington and the Nuremberg incident. And that was the basis for the Nuremberg trials. So they don't have a lot of capabilities with our own military, because they're not going to go in and shoot up their own people. So they have their own little military. And it's very scary when you start arming people and programming people and let them go, because number one, they're essentially untrained, and some people just don't deal well with that kind of authority and that kind of power. And so we get all the different characteristics that we saw in previous history with Hitler's regime and all the other nasties, if you want to go back, and Genghis Khan and all the others. It's nothing new. It's just now upon us is the problem.
Well, when I take a moment to look up, somebody posted something on my Facebook wall about Jimmy Carter. It was really earlier this summer. A comment from Jimmy Carter saying, America has no functioning democracy. That's former President Jimmy Carter. And he had a really biting commentary, which I happen to agree with, at like how profoundly all this legislation, we've basically legalized tyranny in the country. And it seems like if people are paying attention, they're being pretty quiet about it. What is your experience? I know who this is, and that you have really looked at a lot of things, and your background, your professional background, puts you in the position of knowledge.
Well, you know, I would take exception with President Carter's statement in that we have led a program of mischaracterization of our government. Our government is not a democracy. It's a republic. There's a huge difference. And it was formed by the founding fathers based on the fact that we had people with morality and ethics to run it. And once those characteristics disappear, then they start turning lies into truths and truths into lies. They've done a very good job over the last 100 years. It started a long time ago. It really did. And it's just now starting to come to a head. But there's so many other global issues about that's going on right now. You know, you can only sell so many apples in a group of people. And once those people have, everyone has an apple, then what are you going to sell them if all you got's apples? And so now our global economy is starting to max out. We have... inflation, and we don't have anywhere to go. So what do? You hit the reset button. You drive it back.
You sell them pesticides. You take your chemicals that were left over, and you...
You reduce the population, and you start over.
Well, that's seems like what they're trying to do.
I wish I could come up with a better explanation for it, but as best I can see, it's about depopulation. You know, I actually went to a training event when I was in the eighth grade. It was put on by the Ford Foundation, which is another propaganda group that was talking about overpopulation of the world. So that we're talking 1968. They're already implanting the idea that there's too many people in the world. They were talking about birth control. They were talking about all these things. And so, you know, that's 40 years ago.
Yep. Hey, I'm going to try and put two of you online together. I have somebody, I believe, calling in from Oahu with some really strong opinions. And let's see if you guys can work together, okay?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha, no.
Aloha.
My name is Ponoke Aloha. I like what this guy is saying, except as far as getting to forefathers and what they're about, because they were basically slave masters themselves and didn't recognize the woman or the indigenous people as being part of their coup that took over America and Hawaii. But, yeah, it's all going to New World Order. Overpopulation is what they're stemming on. But it's a corporation. It hasn't been a governing body for ages. It's been run as a corporation.
Yeah, the United Corporations of America is what I see coming if we don't stop it.
Well, it's here already, but it's not. It's actually, its grounding comes from the Vatican and from Britain. But yeah.
Well, and
the
bloodlines. I would agree with you on the founding fathers. I never said that they had morality in absolute terms, because you can just see what they did to the Native Americans, Indians, and women couldn't vote until Harding got in. But
and the blacks, or the African Americans.
Well, and the other thing was, is if you were an indentured servant or a white servant, you didn't have those privileges either, and that's what no one wants to talk about in the history books either. And so there were a number of white slaves as well as black slaves. These people, the founding fathers, yeah, they had some serious issues. However, they did put together a construct that, if you took notice to those exceptions, was pretty durable. But the reality is that most republics never last 100 years. The very fact that this republic has lasted 200 years is a miracle. And so, you know, we're looking at the big reset.
And Pono, are you looking towards a sovereign Hawaii?
Always. It's never been anything else. There's no treaty of annexation. How could it be anything else?
Right.
We're still a sovereign, neutral kingdom nation. We're just illegally occupied.
And I like to think if the Hawaiians were completely in control, that they wouldn't allow things like GMO companies or this kind of...
Exactly. Yeah. It's not only that. We didn't have homeless. We didn't have jobless.
Right.
You didn't have a deficit until 1949, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think the deficit is in there by design, and
yes,
really currency until, you know, I think... caller number one, you might know, was it 1971? When did the dollar, I think that's when it moved from being gold-based to debt-based.
Yeah, and that was Nixon. Did that, yeah.
And so that's kind of a crazy paradigm to have, that instead of having a note that represents something of value, the note represents one person's debt to another. So we have something very un-Pono, insidious in our currency, which I think has happened now across the world is the way most currencies are. It's 4:30, so I want to tell the listener that you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. So thank you, Pono, and Bill. And Pono, do you have any words of wisdom?
Yes, I do. It's time. I don't know how big of an issue GMO is going here on the islands and around the world. And its main purpose is control of our food and water. But people need to also understand, you need to look up and understand that what's being sprayed in the skies, and this is all around the world, is also another form of GMO, and what is being done is to humanity. And it's not for our betterment.
You're speaking of the high-altitude aerial spraying?
Yes, I am. I'm talking about geoengineering, weather control. It's the new weapon of the future, but it's been here for ages. And it just is that more and more people are starting to wake up but don't really understand. Most of the clouds that you now see in the sky are man-made.
The very thin, gauzy ones, right, that are almost like a cirrus
cloud? Well, you have different types. They're able to do all different types. And they do it in different processes of layering. So you have several different types of clouds that they can put out. And a lot of it is done by either drones or by vehicles that are invisible, or basically can't be seen, cloaked.
And that is run by the Department of Defense, though, correct?
That is actually run by the global elite, but yeah, then it goes down to the Defense Department. But again, like he said, you know, everything is coming to a new world order where they're trying to figure out how to get rid of 90% of us and still keep this as a utopia for them. And until more and more people wake up, or I should say sheeple, we're going to be stuck in ground zero and nowhere to run.
You know what I think is interesting is the government scientists who originally proposed this idea, saying we're theorizing about this possibility and using aluminum and barium particles. Well, Monsanto just so happens to have 6 patents on aluminum-resistant seed. So if aluminum is toxic to human health and aluminum hits our soil and aluminum is already being engineered for resistance by Monsanto, basically it means our soil becomes hostile to plant life when it's hit with aluminum and can't grow anything. Yeah. But if Monsanto has aluminum-resistant seeds, then we'll be able to get Monsanto's aluminum-resistant GMO seeds, which I do not think sounds delicious, sir.
With bits of frogs or spiders or whatever kind of DNAs they inject into it.
Well, you know,
viruses.
Yeah.
And they have what is called the Terminator gene, too, which prevents these crops from reproducing healthy seeds to grow other crops. These genes also get into our air, water, and soil and go into us. So it's another way of also eliminating our reproductive capabilities, yeah?
Yeah, and I think my doctor was pretty shocked to find spiked levels of barium in my system. Mm-hmm. He said, "Where are you getting exposed to barium?" I said, I got to think it might be what's coming in from the sky, because where else am I getting exposed to this much barium? He looked horrified when I told him there's a possibility they're really spraying us with aluminum and barium.
Well, it's not only a possibility, it's a true fact. And it's there's not too many people that are aware of it or choose to even look at it because they can't be able to. They can't get a control of it.
It's hard to wrap your head around.
Yeah. So they choose not to even look at the issue.
I don't want to believe it.
There's a very, very hard psychological issue there. It's called normalcy bias. And as humans, we like to think that none of this could happen to us because it's never happened before. And so not only does it attack our core values, and really drives anybody who's aware into a state of cognitive dissonance, saying that wow, everything that I thought was true isn't true anymore, and where am I in this world? But we also have this concept that, well, if it's never happened before, it can't happen now, which is normalcy bias. And so they play upon that very heavily. And they tell us all kinds of stupid lies and things that normally we wouldn't believe, but because it's never happened before, we believe it. And,
well, you have to take a look at Pearl Harbor, 9-1-1. Look what those two things that were false flagged did as far as the promotion of an empire building of the elite few.
But over 20 years ago, Henry Kissinger laid out this plan in front of everybody. He said that, you know, if you control oil, you control a nation. But if you control food, you control the people.
Yeah, that was it. That's it in a nutshell. But it's also
exactly.
water is the new oil. And a lot of people don't realize that all this fracking that's going on is poisoning most of the waters. So the choice waters that would be reserved for the very few who can afford it are those that are privileged. The rest are going to get this radioactive, drugged out, polluted type of water to be drinking from. And that's our islands sit on aquifers of, basically pretty pure water. Goes through a lot of layers of filters through our lava. And the military basically taps into that. And now you have these other global companies that are brought over by AIPAC and TPP. To come and siphon our waters, sell it in bottles, and make their gold. But again, these are all our resources that are being illegally sold. So
TPP, for the listener, is Trans-Pacific Partnership. So I have Akamai listeners who are sending me NASA websites and where it is talking about, future strategic issues for warfare. And these things are, this is a NASA site. And it's stressful to see what are there. Although I'm trying to really look at the source on this to see if it is going to really truly take me back to NASA. But there's a lot going on, and when we look at this economic doctrine that came out from Chris Dodd, I've been trying to study it this afternoon, and it wasn't really that easy for me to pull all the way through it. But they slide in little pieces there, so there's elements about a bail-in. Do either one of you gentlemen or any of the ones in the room, I actually have Clayton Kubo and Wendell Kubaton in here, too. Do you guys know much about the bail-in elements?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think and it's all written in very vague terms, and what they've done is they've delegated a lot of the regulations and the mechanics down towards the banking regulation standards and agencies. But when they talk about recapitalization, they're talking about taking the money that's available in the federal banking systems. That means anybody that has a checking or savings account, and recapitalizing these large banks that are too large to fail, so-called. And like I say, from everything I can tell, Cyprus was just a prototype of what went on.
So for the listener who doesn't know what that means, in Cyprus they put a freeze on everybody's bank accounts with the intention of funding the national debt that mostly went for these contracts with private companies for building infrastructure, that they're going to just take it out of everybody's, like basically just a direct tax of pulling it right out of their bank accounts. That's what happened in Cyprus.
Right. And they're setting it up to to do the same thing here. And again, you know, this is all very tentative because they have so many plans in effect right now. It's hard to tell which string they're going to pull first, so whether they black out the United States with a electrical grid test, and then they pull back on food stamps, and then that gives them the opportunity to declare martial law. And it's very difficult to predict, because not only do they have all this going on, they flood the internet with misinformation and disinformation.
Very true. it's been good chatting with you. I'm glad, I'm really happy of what you had to share. Again, my name is Pono Ke Aloha, and if you'd like to know a little bit more about me, just Google Pono Size, PONOSIZE. I have over 850 videos up on YouTube. A lot of them deal with Kanaka Mo'oli issues. Another thing you might want to keep your eye out that's really happening big time over here is Agenda 21, which again is still, it's all part of the scam, all part of the plan.
So that's an agenda for the 21st century of the United Nations. So if somebody Googles Agenda 21, people will say, oh, that doesn't even exist, or poo-poo it. But all you have to do is look, and it's right there. It's absolutely
on
the UN.
Real. And it's being done all over the world. So it's not just happening in the USA or in occupied Hawaii. But I can see, I see the resemblance of what's been happening and what's been going on as far as with our food, with our water, capping off our streams, cutting our veins, basically keeping our ahupua'a, or our cycles of life going. And this is how, with our streams flowing into the ocean, you have your brackish point, to where a lot of the young fish are basically born and raised. When you cap off all these streams, they have no place to lay their eggs. That's what happens to our fish population. And then we have another big thing, again, that was basically man-made to happen, and that was what happened in Japan, the Fukushima. So we're having tons of this radiation. And over here, everybody seems to be in a la-la land. But they don't realize when you're getting all these heavy concentrations in Canada and Alaska, you got to remember that we're way before them. So, we've got to start really opening our eyes and thinking about, you know, how long do we want to survive and what are we really all about?
There's a great or powerful story on, like, an Australian site called The Ocean is Broken. I don't know if any of you read that, but just talking at this guy who sails, or not in a sailboat, in a regular boat, in a ship across the sea, and going through and seeing that there's hardly any birds or fish anywhere in the water.
I read that article. Yeah, that's it. That's the spooky part of it. But you have to realize that it didn't only take place over here. What happened in the Gulf with that massive spill, and then also that codex that they used to basically diffuse the oil so it basically particled out so it couldn't be cleaned up. But it all then layers down into our food supply and into us. So, yeah. We're being poisoned through all different ways, and it's just for us to open up our eyes and not become slaves.
And
they're using our own money to do it.
Exactly.
And when you look at the cost of these things, like this crazy amount of bullets being bought, or all these big, rough vehicles that they're sending everywhere, all these things, at the same time cutting back food and cutting back help for the homeless. It's a
house of cards that's being made to fail. And that's the bottom line of it. This, like he had said, martial law is definitely in the future. This is the same reason why we have these FEMA camps being built all over the place. we have several here in Hawaii. And they're not fueled yet, but they're ready to be fueled. And
there's
this
a lot
is what
of them
they
in,
are.
In the mainland. A mainland. Yeah. And we're paying for all that. Kellogg's Brown and Root has made billions of dollars building FEMA camps and new runways and all kinds of things to land C-130s full of people or cargo trains and spurs. There's one probably 35 miles from where I'm at right now.
Yep, there's one about 5 miles from where I am right now.
Are you on Oahu, Pono?
Yes, I am. So, I'm up in Manana, Pearl City, but you have it up at Camp Smith.
Yeah, a lot of them are refurbished old military camps around the continental United States.
That's exactly right. That's what they did at Fort Chaffee, Arkansas. They had the barracks where they detained the Vietnamese and some of the Cuban refugees. Mysteriously, those barracks were old World War II wooden barracks. They burned down. And then the next thing you know, Kellogg's Brown and Root comes in and puts the 12-foot-high Constantino wire-lined fences around it. And now they have an internment center.
Do you know if it's empty, or are they holding what they call illegal immigrants? I know that there's
as far as I know, it's empty. That place is a unique place because that's where a lot of the SEAL teams train on missions before they go overseas. They have an entire Middle Eastern town mock-up over there, and they bring SEAL Team 6 and all these other SEAL teams in and train around there. So it has a lot of other active duty uses right now. So
I know that
they would expose them to that type of high security environment.
I know they're building one or almost completed with one up in Alaska that's supposed to hold close to about 1 million people.
And, you know, it's almost too awful to believe, but when I see so many videos on YouTube, and then I talk to people who live near them and even who get contracted to do, like, electrical work on them, you know, I think most of us are really good people, so it's hard to believe that bad things would be done to good people. And I also do think that a lot of the people who are in our government or who are in the pipeline of creating this reality, they are actually good people too, and they don't realize what they're participating in.
The history books are full of it. They're just doing what they're told.
Yeah.
That's exactly what the guards from Nuremberg said just before they hung them.
That's it. That's the bottom line. How do you treasure the roof over your head and where you're at?
I wish the United States government had decided to be a part of the Nuremberg Code, but they opted out.
Well, of course.
Why would they want to comply with international laws about experimentation on humans?
Yeah.
And informed consent.
And that's essentially something that we have happening in Waimea and Kekaha. Well, I appreciate the mana'o all the way from Arkansas to Oahu coming in right now. And
it's been a pleasure talking to you, Guy. I appreciate it. If you want to keep in touch, just look for Pono Ke Aloha on Facebook.
Love you, Pono.
Google, Pono Sai. Say mahalo. You guys have an awesome, beautiful day. Aloha no. Bye-bye.
Absolutely, and thank you for the opportunity and the enlightenment. You guys have a great afternoon, and I'm going to go make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for my grandson.
Cool. Aloha.
Aloha.
Aloha. Aloha.
Okay, and Clayton and Wendell, pull your mics up. Say hi to the listener audience. See if they're there.
Yes, it's okay. On, Clayton.
Baby. Go ahead. Bang on it some
more. Okay, you got to be up close to it to actually hear you. Are you mic'd up okay? Say yes.
How's it going?
All right, there you are. And pulling Wendell up, too. So lots of important things. And one other little important thing that I was seeing on the Internet today was even about how the marijuana industry, because we're thinking about hemp being grown over here and really how that gets exploited and overpolluting and overwater consuming. It's really tough. Everywhere there are challenges. It seems like, it reminds me of bowling, how there's little gutters that the ball can go in. And when you have something playing on Pono's name, when you have a Pono program going, still yet something difficult can happen.
For every solution, there's a new problem arises.
Yeah, I think we need biodiverse agriculture. Industrial hemp would be a wonderful thing, but it shouldn't be another monocrop to come take over Hawaii. There needs to be limits established. There needs to be defined in the legislation that that legalizes industrial hemp for phytoremediation and for textiles that it cannot be genetically engineered. Otherwise, that's going to be a huge disaster, and it's such a crucial plant, and it has so many uses. We really need to keep that clear. And if you're going to legalize cannabis too, then I think you need to legalize indoor cannabis and outdoor hemp so they don't cross-contaminate, which is something that those of us who have deep respect for nature understand. We don't want to cross-contaminate plants that will hurt each other, so we be thoughtful.
And when we look at like medical marijuana, I keep reading all these things that sound pretty amazing. I don't know, you know, like about the oils and stuff. But we don't want those raised on gnarly chemicals either, because then it almost undoes what
takes all the nutrients out of it, and it takes the whole point of the healing out of it when you use industrial chemicals.
I would say if Hawaii was going to move forward with that, then they need to make sure that it's organic only and no genetic engineering of either, because both have incredible uses, and we really need the industrial hemp to fix our toxic soil, hopefully.
Yes, and we do have a caller on the air. Aloha, you are on the air. Thank you for holding.
Hey, aloha.
Aloha.
The medical marijuana on Kauai is our supreme ace in the hole.
Can you turn your radio off?
Just a minute.
Yeah, medical marijuana in Hawaii has a lot of potential.
Yeah, if you legalize gay marriage and industrial hemp and medical marijuana for everyone and cannabis, you would have a booming economy in Hawaii.
Hello?
Yeah, you're there.
Okay, all good?
Yes.
Okay, so shoot. The medical marijuana side for Kauai is going to be our ace in the hole. If we try to, like, go with the flow and do industrial hemp, you know, Iowa, Nebraska, all these other places can do that. We need to grow the best herb in the world right here on Kauai. And we're set up for that. It's a given.
I think we used to really shine at that brightly.
You know.
I know Colorado.
It's a given, you know. So why not just give us our freedom to make our medicine and grow the best medicine in the world. You know, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
It didn't happen at a commercial, I mean, a true industrial level. It was kind of, I would say, a boutique farming activity here. When I moved here, you could smell the raw buds just from the street.
Hey,
you know?
Hey, Felicia, me and you, basically, both came about the same time, and remember back in the 80s when we were paying like $40 for a quarter of Mexican herb.
You know? You know what? I'm so straight, I never actually have ever bought it.
Well,
but,
maybe
know.
You weren't among us, but...
But I mean,
you know,
I remember
back in
it was...
Back in the day, Pakalolo used to be really hard to get, and I attribute that to the Reagan years, you know. He had his war on drugs, and yeah, it kicked our ass.
Yeah, but before that, now
we got an island full of meth heads and shit like that. You know what I mean?
You can't cuss. Don't cuss again.
Oh, sorry. But, let Kauai be the flagship for the best medical marijuana grown on the planet, you know?
If you want to talk about the war on drugs, I think you got to take it back another step and look at what happened with Hearst and the Secretary of Treasury and the DuPont family, who is now doing DuPont Pioneer GMOs, and they had just invented nylon. And hemp, prior to all this use of cannabis, hemp was a textile. It was an industrial textile, and it was used for all kinds of things like paper, etc. Well, DuPont wanted everyone to start using nylon, where they were using hemp. And William Randolph Hearst had invested very heavily in timber and lumber, and he wanted to print his newspapers on trees instead of hemp. So there was a campaign launch, and then the Secretary of Treasury, I think Andrew Mellon off the top of my head, had invested heavily in the DuPont family's product, nylon. So there was a three-prong attack on industrial hemp to try to make it like this reefer madness yellow journalism to make it illegal.
Hey, sister, I'm all here in your documentary. But the truth is that the best marijuana on the planet can probably be grown on Kauai, Big Island, and Northern California.
Thank you for that input.
Okay.
Thank you. Aloha.
Aloha.
Aloha. Aloha, you're on the air.
Okay, can you hear me?
I can.
Well, I'm a little older than you, or more. Maybe we're the same age, but I'm born and raised here, and I get pictures of me in my stepfather's garden of very big production in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And my stepfather was a Californian, and they used to pump it. And I still have Polaroids. I still have Polaroid photos of me in that garden. I'm like 6-7 years old. And so you're highly mistaken if you are promoting that it wasn't a commercial product. And
what I'm really an happened, industrial
and what
level.
Really, hold on. What really happens is you can go to Amsterdam and get Kauai Electric and Maui Wowies. And for a long time, they've exported it out. And that's the real deal, girls.
And even now?
Industrial hemp will bring the THC down on everybody's crop that's outdoor. And I'm not an indoor guy. Mm. I agree with that guy. If you really want to make the money, go with the medicine. Forget that industrial hemp. We don't even have enough land for that. Okay? The guys in Iowa and all that corn from Missouri, where I did boot camp way back in the day. And I know for a fact they have it growing wild already over there. That's the kind of places that market that. Let us grow the good weed to export it to the guys that need it in the pharmacies. That's the real ticket.
Colorado's making a lot of money off of it right now. Now that they've legalized it.
Yeah, well, you guys should get the industrial hemp out of you guys' mind.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not a good way to go.
All right. Well, thank you for your Mano.
I can understand why people would feel that way because of the cross-contamination, but maybe we can find a way because of the phytoremediation properties of industrial hemp. So I'm not saying that's just an idea to do indoor-outdoor. I don't want to limit it either way,
right.
But we got to think about these things before we say, let's go and do this, because if we, you know, legalize hemp and then it affects all the outdoor crops, that's going to be terrible.
Well, when I saw the article today, it was a Dan Rather report about how intense is the chemicals, you know, and the environmental degradation. Then I asked my cousin who lives right in that area, and if you're listening, Callie, hi, that she lives right in that area, and there are assassinations and all different kinds of challenges going on, and a lot of still illegal business happening in Humboldt County where it's very large scale.
Assassinations?
Yeah, of, you know, different people, like fighting amongst that growing community. It's not the backwoods folks who've lived there forever. They are people who've come in. Actually, they're not even American.
Oh, mm-hmm. And they're fighting what, over contamination? What are they fighting about?
Crops, you know, like area control of the industry. I guess I got to reread the article. It's, fighting with each other. Just like, I think Kauai has never been gnarly like that, but in California they can have little turf wars.
Yeah, I think like some literally. Kind of limit on how industrial and how big any one entity can get might be a good idea, because we want to keep it small and localized with profits going back to the community.
Yes. And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Kauai Soapbox Live, which is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Anahola Strings, Stringed Instruments, Aya's Garden, and Kauai Auto Detailing.
You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284AL Haleiwa.
Kauai Auto Detailing in Kapaa using Kauai-made superpolymer non-petroleum-based carnauba wax helps with saltwater protection and corrosion. Mobile service available. Kauai Auto Detailing, 639-2353.
Anahola Stringed Instruments, still making guitars, ukulele, and violins one at a time from Kauai's ancient koa. Every tree has its own song. Time-honored designs and precision-built custom orders. Beginning and master instrument building classes. Prompt and complete setup, repair, restoration, and reforestation. Anahola Stringed Instruments proudly supports KKCR. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
Aya's Garden, all-natural garden and greenhouse supply. In Kapa'a, down Kukui Street from the Dragon Building. Fertilizers, amendments, soil, seeds, garden and farm organic growing supplies. Open Monday through Saturday. More information at 822-7333 or visit Aya's Garden on Facebook.
Al Pastor Tacos supports KKCR. Across the street from the craft fair in Kapa'a by the beach, Al Pastor Tacos serves fresh grilled local fish, steak, chicken, and pork tacos and burritos in the Al Pastor style. Also a garden salad and choices for the kids. Open every day from 11 to 4. Takeout orders welcome. Al Pastor Tacos, authentic Mexican food. 652-6953.
Ke kani o Kauai nei. The sound of Kauai. KKCR's Fall Fun Drive starts Friday, November 1st. We invite you to join the sound of Kauai by becoming a wave rider. For a $150 donation, your message will be aired over 90 times during our 10-day membership drive. In addition to great exposure and supporting Kauai Community Radio, your business or organization will also receive a 3-month link on KKCR's homepage. Wave Rider forms are available at kkcr.org or phone 826-7774. Get your message on the air and be a part of the Sound of Kauai. Ke kani o Kauai nei, November 1st through 10th. Support Kauai Community Radio.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. We have two callers holding. We're going to listen to what they have to share, and then we are going to shift topics a bit towards our hot local issues. You are on the air. Thank you for holding.
Hello. Aloha.
Aloha.
I'm calling, well, right now for about the medical marijuana. It can be used to make all those products as well, even though it produces the extra psychoactive ingredient.
So the cannabis plant can also be utilized for hemp and fibers?
Yeah, it's still
a
hemp plant, yeah. It doesn't mean it can't be used for that, too, because it makes paper and plastic and gasoline and diesel and paint and all these carbon fiber products can be made out of it. It's really, really good stuff, you know. Ford even made a car out of it and fueled it on hemp. So, you know, they believed in it, too, and they were experimenting for all kind of different stuff back then because it was a industrial-type revolution going on. So, yeah, I think and it makes sense to go with the, or not to adulterate it. And one thing, though, concerns me is the U.S. government has the patent on cannabis. So are we going to have to fight our own corporate government to get us so we can use the patents that they own? Because it's us, right? So that's kind of a funny thing. And besides, you know, if you use real meticulous care, you can, like, harvesting it with a helicopter. And, you know, you get real good smoke, and people need that smoke. And I'm all for the government getting it and smoking it, because they need to get a handle on this stuff, you know? So the last time they took mine, which I'm trying to grow legal, I have a prescription, but I guess they don't feel that, you know, I deserve my prescription, so they take my plants. And I still suffer from the pain.
So you have what do they call it, a blue card, and they still take it away from you?
Golly gee, I didn't have enough money to buy my renewal for my prescription.
And what does that cost?
It's $135.
I couldn't afford it.
How do you what? You have to pay to renew
every
a prescription?
Year. It's $135 a year.
For
I've
something
never had
that,
one,
that
by
you
the way.
That you have to, when even you grow your own plant, you have is like a tax?
Yeah, well,
I believe that the symptoms magically disappear in the system, but I still maintain them. So, yeah, that's what happens. They take my herb because of a little glitch, not being able to pay for it in this present, economic conditions.
So then is it a crime then to have it if you don't have the $135?
In my heart, no, it's not a crime. But it's never been a crime for me in my heart, so they'll never take that from me. But I wish it would, get smart about, helping people with pain.
Well, it'll be like it in a couple months. It'll be a crime to not have health insurance.
Well, let's get smart about it. I could tell you a story 20 years ago about health insurance. I was involved directly in a roundabout way. My wife had an implant in her knee, and it broke on our honeymoon, and so we got canceled insurance because of pre-existing condition. Because she had a metal knee in her leg, it was pre-existing.
Right, yeah.
So they wouldn't cover us. I had to go on, lose everything I owned, go on Medicaid. And the only reason we could get an operation is because the president came to Hawaii, and I'd raised so much stink with everybody. They were so tired of hearing me for 4 months. They couldn't understand it. My wife laying in bed with a broken metal prosthesis. And finally, the president came around to getting a grant from the Queen's Trust to get the operation done.
And I'm glad to see her walking around now.
Yeah.
So we've got a lot of challenges. Thank you so much. I got other people holding. Do you have a final thought?
Well, that's where it all started for me with this health care stuff and everybody being able to have health care. I think, it's a great thing. So let's treat it good.
Okay.
God bless.
God bless. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a little bit different angle on this industrial hemp. If we were to take all the land that we use for sugarcane and make it into industrial hemp, the amount of pollen that would be in the air would be so incredibly dense and thick that we would have so many health problems. And then the people down in Waimea, that land gets tilled twice a year with industrial hemp, or even once a year tilling, making these fields with this annual crop. I don't think we would have health issues of a different sort, and for that reason, I would say there's other crops. I mean, I just throw this out there. What about bamboo? Bamboo, you don't have to till the soil anymore. You don't have a lot of pest problems, and you can just cut it, utilize it, the fiber's there, and just keep growing it just like grass or just like sugar cane, but you don't have this annual harvest, tilling the soil, losing our topsoil, et cetera, et cetera. Industrial hemp comes with its own problems. I think the guy that was talking about they can do this on the mainland is right on because, yeah, they can. Let's do something that the mainland can't necessarily do or some country, something that we can use here. I mean, there's a lot of things that we can use, bamboo for right over here, making different things, and it makes great clothes and all the other fiber materials, and strong wood and plywoods and flooring and all kinds of things. So just, some different ideas, but I don't think industrial hemp, just the whole idea, industrial means large scale to make any type of you know, a profitable agricultural thing, and the amount of pollen would be incredible, something we don't think about with medical marijuana because you kill all the males. The industrial hemp, you just throw it out there and it goes. It's just,
so,
I've heard stories about in L.A.
Thank you for all those ideas. And I have a couple of guys who live right across the fields from that, and I want to hear them weigh in on it. So thank you so much.
Okay,
aloha. Wendell and Clayton, do you have any thoughts about what you want grown across the street from you? Put your mouth to the mic.
They're trying to decide which one's going to speak.
I know. Don't be shy, guys. You drove all the way up here.
I'd like to see food growing across the street from you. Something that feeds Kauai, but of course the land will have to be remediated first. But what do you say, Wendell?
I agree. Yeah, if they can use all that area to grow vegetables or papayas, mango trees, whatever.
Mangoes,
but
coconuts.
It has to be remediated first.
And yeah.
One of the better ways is through the cannabis plant.
Yeah.
Because it'll draw all the toxins up into the
But then you
system.
Don't want to smoke those toxins, right?
No, you don't.
No, not
the hemp.
You
better get rid of it. I don't know how they're going to get rid of it, but...
I think there's diversified options for remediation, and I think as far as the hemp goes and any crop, we don't need any more monocropping. So maybe we need to kind of get rid of that phrase industrial hemp and look at it in a smaller context or other plants as well, like mushrooms, which are also great phytoremediators, so that it's, I don't want any one crop coming in here and doing like the sugar cane and the pineapple and the corn. We don't need that. We need the
diversity
food.
Right.
Yeah.
But it would just be temporary.
Right, right.
As soon as the soil is remediated, then it can be used for vegetables and food, real food, organic food.
Yeah, I agree.
I see something that stay away from a cliff, yeah. And something, I guess, like, say, mango, some kind of fruit trees would be better in that area. Thanks, Felicia. You should have just tell me come closer to the mic.
I was. So bringing something right there. I have some Akamai listeners to texting me want to talk about the Agribusiness Development Corporation. Do either one of you gentlemen know much about that, or that Akamai listener can call in? Also, I do know some elements about it, but I've had, you know, I think that was actually brought up in context of all the humbug running around the world, and I think that really the point that was being made was to be sharing that the Agribusiness Development Corporation seems like a tentacle of the kind of machine that we're seeing in some of these big globalized decisions. It's an extension of it.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not real sure, but when I did go to Oahu and I went to the Department of Land and Natural Resources and I was making inquiries about the Commission of Seven, and I was told that the ADC had a management contract with the state. So I was trying to understand why the ADC was actually a public corporation, or was it private?
And what was it?
It seems the guy told me I had to get a FOIA to find all, to get the leases from ADC.
Freedom of Information Act?
Yeah, because I wanted to read the lease on how these people, these seed companies, got the leases without having to go through an application process with the commission. And they were just granted the leases from the sugarcane companies, and they never had to reveal any information or justify water usage or
no EIS,
nothing. They didn't have to do anything. They just took the water.
I was at a luncheon that Daniel Inouye put on. I don't know, were either one of you guys at that luncheon that Daniel Inouye put on? It was in like the mid-90s, and he's such an amazing speaker, and it was when he said, you know, change will come, was his point. And it was when he announced the stopping of the subsidization of sugar and that there would be a lot of changes. And, you know, at the time, I was in my 20s, I think, my late 20s, and I really did not have an awareness to really grasp the significance of it. He had the big five people that were here, maybe they're not, like Gay and Robinson, AMFAC, Alexander and Baldwin. People flew in from Chicago, and he had them stand up in a room. It was at the Kauai Beach Resort. I remember the evening. I mean, it was at lunch. It was the lunch, actually. And he was saying, don't panic, and that we have something coming right behind it in its seed. And I remember at the time thinking, wow, that's amazing. That's great.
And maybe we should have panicked.
Yeah, but I mean, there was never... Back then, you know, we didn't know what genetic engineering was.
I don't even think he knew. I think he thought they were going to come in and grow regular seed. I mean, the GMO thing didn't start till after that, right?
Well, it was right around that time. Actually, it was right around that time, and... And I remember almost being jealous, you know, from like a North Shore perspective, is going, gosh, because it was after the hurricane, and it was like the West Side was getting manna from heaven, that they were bringing in the West Side Development Corporation, which used to be part of the Veterans Hospital. It was, it came off of VMHF, so am I saying that right? I mean, that hospital, KVMH.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just seemed like a really good thing, and everything was all handled, and it was like, no panic, no panic, it's all good, we're going to take care. And just so you know, like, when Kilauea Sugar shut down, Princeville opened, like, that same week. So when Kilauea Sugar laid off 400 people, like, 405 people got a job. So that's like something that happened.
Well, yes. As for the ADC, I'm kind of waiting on them for call me up, which I called them on Friday, and the person said that someone is going to call me on Monday, which Monday is good and gone, and now is Tuesday, so still waiting. Get some answers from them, yeah, and see where it's going to go, but I guess hiding, yeah, no. Maybe I guess hiding.
I don't understand how they're making any money if they're renting lands, which stolen crown lands, for $50 an acre on Mana Plain to Syngenta or BASF.
I bet they don't make money here. When you look at how much they're dealing with, I mean, I think the industry makes a lot of money. This is like a design center.
So, and they're not, they won't lease to small entities. When you go and you get in contact with them and say, okay, so this agribusiness development corporation that's supposed to be promoting agriculture, that was actually started, the whole idea of it at in the beginning was to promote more self-sustainability for Hawaii Islands, for all the islands, and that, but they were going to use it in the state to make money off of it. But of course that was turned around. Now, like, people like you and I can't go in there and lease, you know, 50 acres from them.
Well, that's where there's some challenges, and I think if we can create some cooperatives, I think that something that can be a fear from these big landowners, not trying to side with them, but if they have, Felicia wants 2 acres, and Clayton wants 10, and Wendell wants another 15, that they end up with a patchwork. And as one or another starts to fail, or they're trying to put all these different pieces together. In fact, like when AMFAC had to sell off their lands, I was at that time really involved with the business community, and I was the president of the North Shore Business Council. And we were trying to put offers together, and we're trying to talk to these different companies. And they were actually listening, but they had overwhelming land taxes that they couldn't hold on to their land. And so if they did 1 acre here or 2 acres there or even 100 acres, it didn't relieve their tax burden enough. And so if they could just go, okay, somebody's going to take over all 6,000 acres, basically, if it was placed into an agricultural use, the tax burden dropped, so they were able to hold on to the land just by not having to capitulate under the land the tax burden. Because if you don't use it for ag, it goes to the highest and best possible use of the land, so the taxes were prohibitive. I did have a caller who didn't want to go on the air, but she was pointing out, and she's accurate, that Pioneer was here well before the 90s. I think, do you guys know, like, probably decades before that?
DuPont, too.
Quite a while it was here, from what I understand.
But
it wasn't at above Waimea.
And they were growing just regular old hybrid seed corn.
Right. It wasn't, didn't have the large emphasis in here. And then Kilauea Sugar was owned by C. Brewer, that was called C. Brewer Chemical. You know, we've had this fashion shift, and it used to be better living through chemicals was put out all over the place, you know, and that was the trend. And now, I think now it says life sciences or something, you know, that people repackage things. So, I mean, if we want to look at the whole issue with a forgiving heart, it's just time to change. That's what I say. It's out of fashion. You know, we need to, we've learned better. We had the Industrial Revolution, then we had the Green Revolution after World War II. Plastic began after World War II, and we've filled the Pacific Ocean and the other oceans too, but we've filled the ocean with plastic in 70 years. And
because we're addicted to petrochemicals still. And
it's every one of us.
Everybody.
So we all have to become less addicted to our easy lifestyle.
And I think some structural changes need to be made as far as things like not being able to lease small parcels of land to local farmers because it's going to burden your taxes. So why are things like, for example, the GMO companies aren't paying GT taxes, and yet we can't afford to rent land reasonably to small owners because it's going to, like, bit and piece all of the land? Well, then you need to say that this entire section of land, this 1,000 acres here, is for small parcels. But in the meantime, the ADC is kind of like the PLDC of ag. And I really don't appreciate the government having a committee that includes Monsanto lobbyists and community affairs manager Alan Takimoto deciding what to do with Hawaii land. That's an offense.
It is. And so what we're all doing is waking up, wising up, and rising up. And we're figuring it out. And so I'm not sure who the person was who called, but, I mean, without vilifying the people who work in the fields or for these industries, it's like we are waking up and going, huh, it isn't as we thought it was, and that we need to make changes. And I do remember also, I'm again not being an apologist for what happened in history, and I was naively there, so I don't have all the details. So if somebody from the Kauai Economic Development Board is listening, please call in, because the Kauai Economic Development Board was the group that began at that same time and was part of what ushered this in with all good intentions. Honestly, I knew the people. Nobody was sitting there thinking, how are we going to, like, create a problem? Everybody was trying to be hero. And when sugar subsidization came forward, that was a decision one year in the legislature. Maybe it was coming for a while, but it happened.
Now the subsidies go to corn.
That's right. So they shifted
to genetically engineered corn. Well, is getting all the subsidies instead of the sugar.
Well, and I would say on a federal level, if we look at the GMO subsidies, it's not per se that the government is specifically just saying, oh, let's subsidize GMO corn. What the GMO companies have done is to take over the mainstay crops that are required or at least considered part of our regular diet. So what happens is you have federal crop insurance subsidies that we pay for with our tax dollars. So if you're a farmer and you're growing X amount of a main crop like corn, and your corn fails and you need to have enough money to plant again for the next season. So you'll receive subsidies as if your corn had succeeded so that you can afford to plant again. So that's why we have the problem. That's why in 2010, 70% of the U.S. soybean value was subsidized by our tax dollars, and 94% of the U.S. soy is GMO. So they take over the mainstay crops so they can get the tax breaks for when the crops fail. And if that's true, then we're looking at something like potentially 70% of 94% GMO soy failing.
Well, so when we could look at the derivatives market that happened with the housing pieces, you know, like what we had happen in the economic boom and bust cycle, people who are at the top of the pile on the investment issue, they're, I want to use the word avaricious. They're looking at how it's like a giant game of Monopoly.
Right.
And they take it all over. Right. So we have, I would say, some sociopaths that rise to positions of prominence. But that's because it's how our economic system is structured. We have to change our economic system. I don't have the solution. But we do need to all be brainstorming the problem. And I tend to be a voice that wants to be inclusive and wants to actually hold hands with our people who are on the other side that are here locally, mm-hmm. that aren't at the top of the pile doing bad things. And when I talk to them, I think a good number of them truly believe they have been doing something good for the world for the past few decades, and it's very hard to shift that paradigm. It's tough to have thought that's what you're doing, and then having people throwing it in their face, look, no, you're doing the wrong thing. And so we have to just shift, you know, we have to shift and do the right thing.
I think it's happening. You look at, like, Kirby Kester's testimony from the Hawaii Crop Improvement Association, which is a GMO lobbying group, and he actually admitted on the stand that the pesticide buffer zones will not protect people. So I'm kind of seeing, like, I don't know if it's what I would call a Freudian slip or what, but I see sometimes these people who work for these companies, it's like they'll say in one sentence, this is wrong because I'll lose my job. In the next sentence, but I want to know if the school gets sprayed again because I have a kid I love that goes there. So I think the shift is happening, and we're starting to realize, hey, you know what? Everybody has a right to know and a right to a clean, safe environment and a right to reproduce without being hit by all these intense agrochemicals that cause birth defects, and a right to food that doesn't include glyphosate and pesticides and mutating viral genes and cauliflower mosaic virus.
And people just have this huge threshold of jumping over it, because I see a lot of people who are in the marches and I watch what they're eating, and so they haven't made the leap yet of understanding, all right, dust is blowing in their face. Here, I got two guys with dust blowing in their face. Do you guys, I'm going to put you on the spot, do you eat right? As we would, us girls in the room would think. Do you eat junk food?
I try not to. But we changed our diet.
You did?
Yeah. My wife and I, after she got sick. And actually, I changed before that, you know.
But it's hard to make that change, isn't it?
Yeah, because when you go out, or you go out with friends, you actually have to give in a little.
How about you, Clayton? What do you eat? Do you eat macaroni and cheese, Kraft, whatever?
No macaroni and cheese.
I like that, by the way.
I try and do my very best to feed my son, my mom, and myself, you know, good food, not just GMO kind of stuff. That's why I'm supposed to be at somebody's garden right now and picking some vegetables. But if you're listening, I'm going to be kind of late, or maybe I'll just pass on that one there.
You know, I want to go to Clayton's house for dinner sometime.
I think we have some organic dinner ready for you guys after the show. Yeah. But, you know, for me...
Do you guys need to leave?
I have it.
They're fine.
Okay.
I know for me, I had to set it in levels, and it's something that I think we're constantly improving on a daily basis as we start taking back our food sovereignty and growing our own food and getting access to local organic produce that doesn't contain chemicals. But I know for me, at first, years ago, I didn't think I could afford to go totally organic, so I set levels of commitment for myself. So if I'm going to buy any junk food, if I want to buy any cookies or chips or anything like that, it cannot be this junk chemical. It has to be organic, right? So first I shifted out my junk food. That's like a mid-20s philosophy, right? And then later you start saying, okay, maybe I can get involved with this community-supported agriculture. Maybe I can farm here to get some vegetables there and start looking at, okay, this is so important. Like Burke Bayer says, you can either pay the farmer or you can pay the hospital. And that's kind of like where I'm at right now, where I'm at the level of commitment where everything that I want to buy for my home, I want to make sure that's organic and GMO-free, because it is really hard to avoid when you're going out and you do have to ask lots of questions. So levels of commitment, goal setting, and accomplishing them will help you build that so we can really be affecting and boycotting GMOs. It has to happen.
And for me, it was 2003 and I got sick. Really sick. I got Crohn's disease, and I didn't have health insurance, and I had to start researching on what was happening with me. I went to a couple different doctors, and it turned out that I had to change my diet completely. So the first thing that happened was we got rid of all the boxed foods.
Yeah.
And nobody in my family ever served boxed foods, and they haven't been in over 10 years.
How about canned foods? Like, I try and go... try and have it be food that's got one ingredient, like
right.
an egg or a steak or rice, or, you know, because it's...
So I just finally recently gave up the last of the canned foods, which was I would still buy the canned organic tomatoes and the canned refried beans. And now with all the news that I've been reading, those are like the last two that... of the canned foods that
I know,
you
I
can't
love
bring in the house. It's like there's nothing left to eat.
Tomatoes. I know. It's like, what do you eat? Like, at some point, it's difficult. Like, I eat a lot from my yard. My boys are on strike. They're like, Mom,
I have one.
Enough already.
I know. I have one of those.
Yeah, spam.
Hey.
That's my song.
And you know, none of us are perfect. None of us are perfect. I can tell you that. I know that not one person in this room is perfect when it comes to their diet. I'm sure every one of us will eat a GMO food here and there.
Not by choice, but unfortunately because we don't always have options and access. So increasing options and access to non-toxic, non-GMO food is absolutely crucial.
I agree.
And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. We've got another caller.
I want to say aloha, Mayor. Welcome home. Thank you for not vetoing the bill.
And the caller, you are on the air.
Okay, shoot. You know, I saw this post of all the candies that the GMO is against. God, you're going to end Halloween for the kids.
Yeah.
You know, the corn syrups, the everything that in these candies that we all have eaten, you know.
It's a toxic treat.
Well, let them enjoy the toxic treat on their day.
And there's also other options. There's like Unreal Candy, which is one of my favorite
things.
Yeah.
I hear that. You know, I can give apple or I can give banana.
But let's be real, the kids don't want apple or banana on Halloween,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So I love the Unreal candies, and they don't have any GMOs. And there are more options now than there have been before, but it's kind of a pain because you have to go out of your way to get them, and they're a little bit more expensive. But if you can afford to, I prefer the organic sour lollipops to other stuff. But, you know, let's not villainize kids, and this is what our society is right now. Let's fix it.
I think that it's been blown out of proportion that if you eat a little bit, not too bad. If you eat a lot, yeah, it's bad.
Bad. Yeah.
I try and just walk in the right direction. And
Amen.
And I think it's kind of like getting exposed to different bacteria in the environment, too. You have an immunity to it if you have a minor amount of exposure, but you don't want to get hit with it, and you don't want to make your whole...
Hey, remember back in the day when we were kids and your parents would check your candy for razor blades, you know?
Yeah, and I think...
Some sick person putting a razor blade in your Snickers bar or something, you know.
Well, and I think back in the day we didn't have all this stuff in the food, too, you know. And why do kids in France get GMO-free Hershey's Kisses and our kids got to get GMO Kisses that have pesticides and GMOs in them? It's not fair.
Right. They do have formulas in these other countries.
Hey, all I can say is long live humanity and just don't get overreactive about all this stuff.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
All right.
Aloha. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for this great program. I try not to eat GMO, stick to organics as much as possible, but after, you know, getting educated and everything, I got so stressed out about what my grandchildren were eating when they were at their father's house, which is totally different than what we eat because we stick to organics. But I got so stressed out that I couldn't sleep, and just hearing about leaky gut syndrome and all this stuff, and my daughter told me, you know, Mom, you're doing more worse for yourself stressing out about this, you know. We just got to make the changes that we know how and stick with organics as much as possible and research everything online, you know. I work in a health food store, and I'm finding out more and more stuff in a health food store that, you know, like the citric acid and some things is GMO, you know, but it doesn't say organic. If it says organic, then, you know, it would be organic. But all I'm saying is that, it's good that we all are getting educated about this, but then there's a stress level when it comes to eating, and I think the stress is really toxic, too.
I refuse to live miserably while we're looking for a toxic-free environment. So,
right. You
know, I think having a great attitude, being positive, I like to pule over all my food,
uh-huh.
You know, and ask that it bless my body. But, you know, ultimately we got to keep a good and positive attitude, and regardless of how many toxins we're being exposed to, remind ourselves that just like the bugs and the weeds who are developing resistance to things like Roundup and these pesticides, we too, as a species, are developing resistance
mm-hmm.
to these things like pesticides. So the right will happen. The pono will happen because...
Yeah. And we are mutants of our environment, too, you know? I mean, we mutate to... I'm not saying it's good, the GMO, anything about it, but, I mean, you know, we do mutate and, you know, but, I mean, yeah, you know, you get cancer at an early age or problems and stuff, but... And the whole Halloween candy thing is kind of a dilemma, too, because I know my grandkids are going to be out there trick-or-treating, and they're not going to be with me or my daughter. But, you know, I mean, everything in love, and I'm not going to try to, like, put the negativity into it for them at all, you know. It's just one day of them maybe eating some candy. And, you know, I'm going to be in my neighborhood passing out candy to all these little kids that, you know, they're all on junk food anyway. But, you know, it's such a dilemma. It's like, what are you going to do, you know?
Yeah. My one-liner is, living is fatal. You know, at some level, I just got to keep going.
Yeah.
Because it's more than the food. It's the radiation in the ocean.
It's everything.
It's everything, you know.
Right.
But, you know, the more we can educate one-on-one, you know, the better. And you can take it for what it is. And, you know, or you can stress out and go crazy, you know, like what I did for a couple of days and where I couldn't even sleep thinking about my grandkids were eating.
Oh, yeah. Imagine living in Waimea and your house is getting blown with toxic dust every day. So
I know,
you try and live a
GMO-free
diet, but it's being blown into your house. So
I know, and these
literally
people can't even sell their houses, you know. It's just so, so sad.
My one-liner
is... And you know what? The United States government just embraces these chemical corporations. I mean, the head of agriculture is a Monsanto dude, you know, so
right.
it's it's just really, really sad when it's being banned in other countries and then America just totally embraces it because of all the money. It's just the money.
And it comes down to, what does it matter if the food is safe to eat if the seed is not safe to grow?
Exactly.
Right. So thank you so much.
Okay. Aloha.
Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Aloha, Felicia. This is Harvest.
Hi, Harvest.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know, since you're talking about Halloween, GMO candy, and all that, that Kilauea Paint and Feed Store, which is right on Kola Road, we are having a trick-or-treat, station, or kids can come by, and we have organic candy we're giving away. And we're going to have best costume prizes, but it's all organic candy, so no GMO.
Yeah. So maybe an adult or two can swing by and experience.
Well,
come get some so that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to get some. I want to bring back some to Waimea.
Yeah, there you go. Come and get some.
And where do you get your organic candy? Through the co-op?
We ordered it online. We ordered it through Amazon at a place that just makes organic candies. I think it's Yummy Earth or something like that. I don't remember the name.
Yeah, Yummy Earth. I love.
Yeah.
Well, I've had some of that before.
5 till 8, if kids want to come by and trick-or-treat there, we'll have all kinds of decorations and good treats.
On October 31st.
Yeah, on Thursday, yeah.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks.
And I want to... And I know some parents that are kind of, to alleviate the situation a little bit with the trick-or-treating, are getting themselves organic candy for the house. So when the kids come back from trick-or-treating, they say, hey, we got all this organic candy here. You can trade your GMO candy for this organic candy, so that the kids kind of have some part in the decision-making process and say, hey, I want this organic instead of that, but I'm going to eat this junk over here.
Yeah. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you for holding.
Hi, I just wanted to address the grandmother who worries about her grandchildren eating, GMO foods and stuff. We have a friend who encourages us to send unconditional love to chemtrails when we see them, or some food that's put in front of us that, you know, we feel obliged to eat, maybe because somebody just served it to us, or, you know, not being in charge of what that person eats. And he says, just send unconditional love. And if you know about Dr. Emoto, he says that the energy you send the food or the water can change the chemistry of it.
Yeah, so, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, my kumu always told this story about these Buddhist monks, and they were visiting one of the monks' houses, and the mother made chicken soup for the sick brother and offered some to the monks. And they sat down to eat, and all the monks went to eat this chicken soup. And her son, who was a monk, said, he pulled out his own food and said, oh, I thought we're vegetarian, basically. You know, I don't eat that chicken soup. And they explained to him that the damage to your body, the toxicity that's caused from, you know, rejecting someone's aloha is worse than blessing this food and taking it into our bodies, basically. So
it's a
hard one. You don't want to reject people's food. It's aloha, it's love. So that's why I say pule and mahalo, and do my best to feed myself well with good food.
Yes.
So I'm not hungry.
So the intention you put to what you are about to eat can actually change its makeup and become, you know, good for you.
And there's evidence of that with his studies on water, at the very least. Yeah.
Yes, definitely. So I just want to bring that back up.
Thank you.
Thanks for all the great work you do.
Thank you. Aloha. You're on the air.
Yeah, I was calling. You guys were all talking about the GMO stuff. And what I wanted to mention is they're still sneaking in with the smoothie cup you're getting at the local health food store.
Please elaborate.
Well, like the corn cups and the corn spoons.
Oh, right. The biodegradable, compostable stuff made out of GMO corn is a big concern for me.
So no matter how organic you are and how you want to stay with the GMOs, as soon as you get a compostable cup, you're investing in them.
Right, and as soon as you drive down the street, because that's in our gas. I mean, it is.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere, you know, so... Yeah. So that's a good point, and it's just that we're all waking up and working on it. Thank you so much.
I just wanted to mention that. I don't know if people are aware that they're buying GMO corn cups.
Well, and GMO cotton and your tampons, ladies.
Oh my gosh. Okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
All right, she made me blush.
Sorry,
okay.
Sorry, Felicia.
All right, well, thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay. You know, the mayor, I think, came home today. He was out being a good dad, mm-hmm. seeing his kid playing football.
Mm-hmm. He was on the main line for a week.
And so he's really in the hot spot.
48 hours,
and
right?
Aloha to him.
Aloha, Mayor.
Aloha, Mayor, yeah. So he's got one half of us really going, sign the bill, you know. And, you know, we're actually in the uphill position. I'm sure the other side that's like, veto it.
One half? I don't think it's one half, Felicia.
Okay, correct me.
More,
I mean,
I think it's definitely more around 75-25, at least 70-30.
We really want the mayor to please sign the bill and protect the keiki of Kauai.
Please sign the bill, Mayor.
Seems simple. Please sign the bill, Mayor.
Well, Mayor, it's in your office now, so, you know, I guess it's on you, yeah? But do your best to figure out what the people of Kauai like. Because I guess it all boils down to that we had vote you in. And I'm not just saying I, it's we. So you get until Halloween night, 12 midnight, yeah, from what I was told. Either you're going to sign them or no sign them and hand them in and it's still going to pass, or you going veto and we going to see you again. Mahalo to you, Mayor. On due respect.
Aloha.
And I have a caller.
Martin Moffin. I'm a nurse practitioner on the west side in Waimea.
Yeah.
I'm a primary care provider. And I can give you over the years of what I see as a really simple formula to the best chances of a better health and likely vibrant health. It's really very simple.
Yes. Yes, please tell us.
Number one, it's eat and drink an organic rainbow. And that includes the clear rivers, the streams, to have things clean enough to be able to do that. That's a number one towards vibrant health. And we don't have that right now. But it's a big goal as far as I can see. Number two, exercise the heart as it's a muscle. Like any other muscle, you want to get stronger, you keep the heart strong, and you lead with the heart. You make decisions with the heart, and you decide what is best for you and the community through your heart, and you exercise it. It's a muscle. That's the next thing. The next thing is to limit rich foods. You know what those are? Those are the ones that taste really good really quickly.
Like ice cream that I had, some with bananas.
Yeah, like really rich, yummy desserts, you know, just really limit it to a really rare occasion. And this is what I see as far as patient outcomes, that patients are healthiest over the years if this is what they follow, and it's really not that difficult if you think of it in these steps. And then the fourth is a healthy social environment, so that you have a lower level of stress hormones running through your body. You know, make it stressless as possible, whether that's through yoga, whether that's you're going hiking, whatever it might be. Those are the most important things, I'd say, in keeping the body really strong, and just keep the risk of harm low.
Thank you. That's great advice.
Yeah, I wrote that down.
Thank you.
It's just really what I see over time. I see that's what really makes the difference, is let's keep us the clean outside ourselves, and let's keep it clean inside ourselves, both emotionally, mentally, and physically. You know, and that's really, it's not that hard when you think about it. It's a lot harder to manifest, but it's an easy formula.
I
just wanted to share with you.
I love hearing a nurse practitioner say these things. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much.
I'll definitely drop by.
Okay, all right, Clayton.
Okay.
Take care.
And drink a rainbow.
Okay.
Okay.
Have a nice evening. Bye-bye.
Thank you. So in a few minutes, we're going to have Jazz with John on, and so we got a chance now to kind of do an around the room. Wendell, let's hear your mana'o. How are you feeling? Why are you guys up here on the North Shore again today? I'm glad that you are, and you just kind of got pulled in here, but tell us why you're here and tell us what's up.
We attended a meeting with Kauai Rising.
Ah, hey, I haven't seen them as much in these events lately. What is Kauai Rising up to?
Well, they're still working on the initiative, but it's not ready. And they're not willing to release what they're doing exactly.
They're still brainstorming for perfection on helping the island?
Yeah, and getting help from the cell death lawyers. So every time they make changes or they have suggestions from the community, they send it to
Okay, I'm trying to remember what that stands for.
Center for Environmental Legal Defense Fund.
Legal Defense Fund,
yeah.
Yeah, they're working around the nation, actually, fracking and a lot of issues. And I went to their democracy school when you're kind of looking at how the nation was formed and where different elements of things got derailed and even where things weren't possibly built right in the first place.
There's a lot of great groups. I also love Center for Food Safety as far as legal assistance for environmental issues goes, very, very much.
Yeah, there's some really good ones.
I think they've won over 150 communities in the United States.
Hmm.
They have overturned the county or municipal ordinances and put in initiatives that give we the people power over the corporations.
With environmental rights, correct?
I think it's primarily human rights.
Okay.
And some areas are also doing rights of nature. But primarily the issue is regaining or reestablishing the Declaration of Independence, where we the people have the power over governments and corporations. And
they are home rule issues because it's been when much larger groups, like whether it's the state or more often the federal government, you know, condemns a town to being where all the sludge and the waste goes for some big industry, and then somebody else gets to be the dumping ground for it. And I want to give a shout out to Kekaha as I say that, because Kekaha, they get all of our opala, they get all of our trash. Kekaha is unfortunate. Is that fair for me to say? I don't want to be dissing on Kekaha when I say that, but I wouldn't want the
whole
island.
West side is just the dumping ground for
it's terrible.
It's terrible.
And on the west side of Oahu, we had the same problem. Largest Native Hawaiian constituency in the world in District 1, and 6 out of 10 toxic waste sites on the island. It's like, what is up with the west side? I know it's the Wild West, but are you really going to do everything you can to the west side?
Well, and it happens on the west side because downwind is the ocean, and it is on the leeward side of the island, so there's less rainfall. And I went and did a field trip there, and we got such amazing people who deal with our landfill over there, and they care very much, and they're kind, and you know, they're literally moving and making mountains, but it's our garbage, and we need to show respect to the west side by not creating so much garbage.
And figuring out how to resolve the garbage you do have in a way that makes more sense.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take this caller very, very quickly. Then we're going to hear from Clayton. Then we're going to go around the room. Caller, you're on the air, but just for a short moment.
While you're waiting...
Turn your radio off, please. Okay, what's up?
Why are you guys all waiting? You get jazz. Talk about rubbish. You get jazz.
Hey, you know what? I am not going to go there again. And I don't want you to call the show on that anymore. Because
well,
our jazz people...
what you like.
Okay, well, I got the thing. So there we go.
Aloha.
Aloha. Aloha. Actually, I want to say a statement on that. We got amazing jazz programmers here who do a great thing. And then I felt kind of bad last show for giving enough time to somebody hassling the program about that, because I felt like, you know what? People are dying, or they're feeling like they're dying, or they're worried about that they're dying, and then I don't want to hear somebody whining that they can't figure out how to just push the button.
If you don't like the jazz, turn it off. I've complained about the jazz a little here and there, but I'm not going to call it.
I love the jazz. Thank you so much all the hard work that you put into it. And we've got some amazing jazz programmers that we're so lucky to have. Okay, Clayton, your turn. What's on your mind to say aloha to everybody?
What's on my mind?
Right into the mic, so I don't have to walk over there.
What's on my mind, I guess? More people need to speak up, come out, and I know get plenty of people out there that like say what they like say. But I asking you guys for come out and say what you guys need to say versus commenting a lot on Facebook. You know, if there is going to be a next meeting about this whole thing, 2491, come to the county building and say your 3 minutes versus saying your hours and hours on Facebook. Come to the county building and say your 3 minutes, and that will be way more better.
Excellent.
Instead of, you know, social networking, don't get me wrong, I love it. And that's the way we can let people know what's going on, where, when, what time, what day. You know, but if there is a next time, I beg you guys to come down to the building, the county historic building, and use you guys 3 minutes in the best way possible. And as for coming to Hanalei today, was an all-day occasion. And I know I'm supposed to be doing other things, but got to try and do the best for this island, yeah? And I guess for all the islands of Hawaii. Mahalo and aloha.
Okay, thank you so much. Christy, a quick word?
I'd just like to say that while we're sitting here talking every day, as each day goes by, the chemical cartel is expanding, planting, and spraying tons and tons of heavy-duty pesticides on Kauai. So the more we keep talking, and every day we talk about this, I mean, it's consumed my life for a long time now, but they're still doing business as usual, and nothing has changed for them. And actually, this week, going to Waimea for the Aloha Aina event, which was so beautiful, I cried because Dow has now moved in and is just so much expansion. And Pioneer is expanding Mauka, and BASF is expanding Mauka. It's blossomed so much.
And the amazing pictures that came out of Kekaha this week of all that blowing dust after this much humbug and screaming, and then to see the dust like four times as high as those monster machines was amazing. Amazing that they would drive down the road and create that kind of dust in the wake of all this community pushback. I was just going to put one little point out here. For those with the smart meters, too, I forgot to say this earlier. The petition is still out. Please sign your petition if you have a concern, and get it to Power to the People, Jonathan Jay, some of these different people trying to make the power company actually listen to the people as well, because that's an area with the cooperative that we can do it. Nomi?
The Aloha Aina event this weekend was amazing, and that was about the water, that was about the river that needs to go back to the people. And that's so significant to me and symbolic. It's the vaivai, that's the abundance, plenty of water, and it's being diverted by the Agricultural Development Corporation. So the ADC, with our dear Alan Takimoto of Monsanto Lobbyist, who is also nominating water commissioners for the Water Commission after the Oahu community blocked them from stealing 2.6 million gallons of water a day in Kunia is an issue. So the ADC is the thing I want to resonate with all of you. It's like the PLDC of ag, and I think it needs to be stopped whether or not it had good intention. It's too much power in a very small group of hands, and we love you guys. We love all of you, every single one of us who is fighting to get the truth exposed. We are doing that because we love you. We love you, Mayor. We love every child, and we want you to live and have a beautiful, happy life where you're not being poisoned and you don't have so many birth defects in the children and the cake. You have healthy generations.
And Nomi, I want to acknowledge you as Babes Against Biotech that has been doing this stuff statewide. So mahalo, mahalo. And Jazz with John is next. We're going to hear the county council report from our hardworking council members. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox Live saying aloha, everyone.